The last 2 days I was in Los Angeles, and we had a seminar there, and that was very good. And I was teaching them about the Christian's responsibility as a citizen, that God has given us three duties. The first duty, does anyone know the first duty that we have to God? To love God. First duty is to love God. Second duty, love one another. Third duty, to render to Caesar. That is actually a duty. It's found in probably 100 passages, but it's found explicitly in Romans 13, where it says, let every soul be subject. Let every soul, that includes Christians. So every soul, this is written by a Christian, Paul, to the Christian community, let every soul be subject to the higher powers. Okay? Only it doesn't say powers. Powers would be dunamis, and there's a lot of words it could be, but the actual word is to the higher authorities. So you are to be subject to the higher authorities. That means the highest on earth. Doesn't mean higher authorities God, but the higher authorities under God. The higher authorities under God. And so the higher authorities under God means if you had a king, you'd be a king. In this country, we don't have a king. So who would the higher authorities, who's the highest authority in our country? Highest authority? President of the United States? Wrong. Who's the higher authority? Not exactly the citizens, more or less. That's ambiguous. Who are the higher authorities? They're persons. Who are the higher authorities?
Others.
That's good. End of discussion, right there. That's good. You could have many who are the higher authorities. So I'll illustrate it this way. I'll put it in red. The highest authority is God Himself. Why doesn't that stay? All right. The highest authority is God Himself. So He is the supreme what? The supreme sovereign. He is the supreme. I know you can't read this, but He is the supreme sovereign over all. He's the maker. He's the maker, and as His maker, redeemer, Lord, you know, creator, all these kind of things. Let's call Him the sustainer, the one that keeps us going, and so on. But as maker, He's got three jobs. First of all, as maker, He's the lawgiver. The lawgiver. God is the supreme lawgiver. Second of all, He's not only the legislative branch, He is also the king, which is the executive branch, and He's also the judge of all the earth. So those are all described in the Bible as to who God is. For example, you could read this, I believe it's in Isaiah 33:22. God, our lawmaker, judge, and king, or king and judge. So God has all three in His hands. He has all three. Now, the one that's most interesting is the first one, that God's the legislator. He's the one that legislates. He's the supreme lawmaker. And Moses, of course, revealed that. And so you would say here that God is the one that revealed the Ten Commandments. You know, He's the one that revealed the Ten Commandments. But He also revealed mercy through the priesthood and finally through the blood of Jesus. But He also reveals power. I'll just make here a Holy Spirit, a dove, symbolic of the Holy Spirit. He also reveals power, so holiness, mercy, and power. His holiness, His mercy, okay, through Jesus Christ as Savior, and His power through the Holy Spirit. So those three, I know you can't read this. It's all right. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to write it up there. So the first two things that matter here, the first two things that matter are that God is the supreme sovereign. And number two, he has a law. However, his supreme law, the law that's supreme over all other laws, is not that which Moses gave, which Jesus then fulfilled. I have come not to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. But actually, it's that which is written on every heart. We call that on his left hand over here. This is the right hand. We call that his natural law. His natural law. Now, the natural law are those three that I just gave you. The natural law is, first of all, my duty to God to worship him. Duty to God. My duty to the neighbor. Duty to the neighbor. And as part of my duty to the neighbor, it's my duty to the ruler. Politics or the civil government is partly then a moral duty to my neighbor. But it's not the whole. The whole love to my neighbor is not in my duty to the king, to the sovereign, to the whoever. So here I have a duty to whoever is the ruler. The duty to the ruler or the magistrate. Now, that is part of this, but you know what? This is actually part of this. So the duty to God includes my duty to the neighbor, includes my duty to the ruler. So that's my natural duty. I have those three duties, but they're really one duty. In other words, in order to violate the third, you have to violate the second. In order to violate the second, you have to violate the first. You cannot love your neighbor if you really love God, you're going to love the neighbor. And if you love the neighbor, you're going to be involved politically. Now, how you're involved, that's another issue, and I'm going to discuss that in a minute. But the natural law, then, is to do justice to God, to every man, and then to fellow citizens, as I believe one person said. Now, that's the first, and the second would be, then, the ruler on earth. So here's a little ruler. That was the supreme sovereign ruler. And here is the sovereign on earth, but this is an earthly sovereign. An earthly sovereign. A temporal sovereign. This is a sovereign over all that's common. All that's common. All that's secular. Secular. And all that's temporal. All that's temporal. Only it's limited. And so this earthly sovereign who is It could be many things. It could be a king. Could be a king. Often is a king. Or it could be an aristocratic group, an aristocracy. Sometimes they call it a plutocracy, which would be just the wealthy. Sometimes they call it a kleptocracy, which is those that steal from you. It can be anything, but it's an ocracy of some sort. So the king would be the monarch. The monarchy, which would be one man rule, monarchy would be one man rule, and an aristocracy would be a minority. It's not one man, but it's more than one, but it's less than a majority. So anything less than a majority is an aristocracy of some but not all. Or it could be a democracy, which would be all men, which the founding fathers called a mobocracy. Because whenever you have a democracy, you have the majority crushing the individual and crushing the minority. A democratic society is not one where people have rights. It's one where the majority has rights to crush the individual and the minority. That's why you do have a democracy today. One in which an aristocracy actually rules over the democracy, which actually destroys the individual. And so on. Do you see how complex it can be? Now, then there's another possibility, and that's called a mixed form. So that's one, two, three. And then there can be a mixed form called a res, R-E-S, publica. Publica. Res publica, it means the public thing or a republic. And there, it's not a king. though you could have a king, it's not an aristocracy, so that you could have one. In other words, you could have elements of all three of the above in a mixed form of government. And it also has ancient precedents, medieval precedents, and modern precedents. But our government was set up as a res publica, which would mean that the earthly sovereign may not be a king or an aristocracy or the people as a democracy, but the people in aggregate. So you could have then the people in aggregate called the sovereign people. So people in their aggregate capacity. So that does not include children. People in aggregate does not include children. It does not include women sometimes. And in our early form of government, it did not include women. And it did not include slaves, and so on and so forth. So you can design it the way you want, because under this form of government, the power doesn't reside in the king. It doesn't reside in a small group of nobles. It doesn't reside in the people as a majority. But it resides in the whole people in aggregate, that is, the adult male, in the case of our original documents, population, who are free citizens, not slave. Y'all see, that's how it was originally set up. You remember that the Negro at that point, or the, they didn't call him the black man, but whatever they called him, he was considered a slave, and he for purposes of voting, he got zero vote, but for purposes of apportionment, since he lived there, he got three-fifths. So he was worth three-fifths to a legislator. How many people you got in your legislative group that elected you? I got 14 and three-fifths, because there was a slave. And so he could only be three-fifths, so you had to add up all those three-fifths. Now, so that's number three, is who is the sovereign? In whom does the sovereignty reside? In whom does the sovereignty reside? Well, the Americans figured out, by reading the Bible, that up until Moses, 2,500 years into the world, God never had a kingship among his own people. And Moses was the first one then to develop a kingship, but he didn't. He actually could have been called king, but instead, he set up a judgeship, not a kingship at all. And he was a prophet. And he was one that didn't give the laws. He just simply got the laws from God and declared them. And then he expounded them and explained them. And then he tied the priesthood to it and so on. So they set up a different kind of what they called a commonwealth or a republic. A commonwealth or a republic are pretty much the same thing, because in Israel, the people in aggregate were in charge. For example, if a king were elected later, which what never happened under Moses. Moses did not give them a king, but it happened not until Saul, not until the end of the judgeship, not until the end when the judges came to an end. You remember Eli and all this kind of stuff. So finally, Samuel, the people said, we want, now look, they have the power, we want a king, we want a king, we want to be like all the other nations. They have kings, we want kings. And God said, Samuel, tell them they don't want a king, they want me as their king. I want to be their king. So God was the sovereign, and if you want to leave God as sovereign, one nation under God, then you don't have the king. You don't have a king, because you don't want a king. You want God to be your king. That's why America set up, like ancient Israel, a sovereign people, because the people always had the sovereignty. If they wanted to kick God out, they could, because they were sovereign. But they were just earthly sovereigns. God still would be king, even if they didn't accept him as king. And God told the Israeli people, look, you don't want me as king. I know what the deal is here. You want to have an earthly king to kick me out. You want an earthly king to kick me out. And that's why the American founders said, let's go back to the biblical, not to ancient Rome or not to ancient democracies in Greece. and so on. Because you know what they found? They found in studying all the forms of government in the past that people would set up what they called a republic, but it really never worked. Never worked. At any time, it never worked. And a republic demands certain moral qualities and a certain amount of trust and wisdom. And so they said, you know, in theory, the Greeks had it, but in practice, they never had it. They still had slaves. They still had, you know, all kinds of other problems. So there really wasn't a republic. It was just an idea, a concept. It never worked out. All republics eventually went back to either monarchs or went back to aristocracy or went back to some kind of unstable democracy. Because democracies are mob rule, any demagogue can rise up and say, people, you know, I'll take care of you. You know, just follow me. And people fall for it every time because they're emotional. They don't want to look into anything anyway. They don't care if, you know, they don't really care to be in charge. They don't want to take the time. They're cynical. They're apathetic. And they don't really care. Because you have to in order to govern yourself, you have to be mature. You have to be adult. You have to be wise. And you have to be virtuous. And so, basically, people would rather be lazy and take care of their own affairs and just leave the government to somebody else and hope it isn't corrupt. But it always is. There's something about, that's why God gave you this duty. You have a duty to render unto Caesar because he knew that men would be corrupt. But of course the people would always have an interest not to be corrupt. So what are their interests? Well, the interests of the people are things like life, liberty, and property. So these would be what's called the dearest interests of the people. Life, liberty, and property. And if you put your life in the hands of a king, or your liberty in the hands of the king, it's not going to be a good deal because he may use it for himself instead. That's what God told him. He said, you know, I'm going to tell you something. He said, you don't want a king. Samuel, tell him. They don't want a king. Why not? Well, first of all, take 10% of your income. I'm telling you, if you have a king, you're gonna lose 10% of your income. How many know that that's happened sometimes? Right. Now, if God thought that 10% was wicked, what would he think of America today? If God thought that 10% was a wicked amount, I mean, he was warning them. You know, don't think it's going to be 2%. He actually gave the number. He'll take your daughters. He'll take your sons. He will ruin your society. You don't want an earthly king. So there are dear interests of the people. Their life should not be in the hands of the king. King Henry VIII could kill you at will. He could take your property when he wished. He could remove any liberty that you had been given. He could just remove it. So if you have a king or an aristocracy, or even a democracy that's so unstable that it's just the majority in any given moment, it could change next moment, some demagogue could get up and say something else, and people are back and forth, they don't know what the issues are, they never bother to find out, they're lazy, they're foolish, they don't inform themselves, even when they do, they're crazy. So there's something difficult about the people ruling themselves. You would have to have a people that were already self-governing. Well, the American founders felt that the theoretical democracies of the past and republics of the past and kingships and so on, they felt that the theoretical ones never worked, but you know, maybe it'll be different because we have a Christian population. How many know that if you have Christians in your population, you might have a self-governing people? You know, I mean, you know, gosh, if you had Christians. How many know, for example, if I was elected president, how do you know this would be a better place? You know, I mean, just if you just think about it. You know, if I was the president, you know, so on.
That's kind of like a Christian carpenter crew that don't curse.
Exactly. Amen. They'll just do a poor job and give you a scripture in the end after they get your money. So having a Christian really doesn't answer anything. I remember when Jimmy Carter ran as president. He's a Christian. He's a Baptist, you know. Well, that didn't help. Because Jimmy Carter was not mature. So it isn't enough to have a Christian. be a believer, you should have one that was discipled, dead to the flesh. Now, Jimmy Carter did some neat things. For example, he walked to certain places instead of riding in the limo. He lowered, you know, he didn't take certain monies and so on and so forth, not above board. And so in a way, he showed what a Christian was. You know, that was his idea of being fair and so on. But he also read Playboy magazine. I don't know if you remember the Jimmy Carter thing, but I do. And, you know, for me, that doesn't sound Christian to me. That didn't even sound Baptist. The guy is a liberal. That guy's not a Baptist. He's a liberal. So I didn't know what kind of Baptist he was, but he didn't sound like a Baptist to me. But anyway, so you get into all these arguments as to what is a Christian and what is maturity. So having a Christian in office doesn't really help a thing. You want to have someone be mature. Now, George Washington was interesting. When he came into the presidency, he actually had some wisdom, experience, wisdom, from God too. He's a Christian. And he prayed every day and so on and so forth. But he had some virtue. In other words, if he gave his word, he kept it. He told his soldiers, you know, if you swear and you're an officer, I will have you immediately removed. I will strip you of all your office. I will remove you from office. And if you do certain other things, I will have you hung. Now, in George Washington's army, unlike ours, you had to toe the line. In fact, you had to go to church. If you were an officer, not an enlisted person or, you know, someone that was drafted in, but if you were an officer, you had to attend church. So that was a different kind of army than we now have today. Don't ask, don't tell, you know, all that stuff. George Washington, never. You'd have never had that. He insisted that we will not win unless we have officers that are virtuous and wise. And so he disciplined them and instructed them in how to behave. Now that made this country a different kind of country because there was a man with Christian faith. He had faith. He had character. And he was obedient to serve the people and not serve himself. He wasn't trying to get a big salary. In fact, none of the founding fathers ever took a big salary. They all took just, you know, the smallest amount, just enough. Abraham Lincoln only had two people in his cabinet, so he didn't spend a lot of money. And none of the founding fathers spent money. They realized we are stewards of the people's capital, stewards of their resources, and we will only use them to the extent that they're absolutely necessary and no more. Now, privately, they might try to make money, but not while they were in office. Not while they were. Now, today, that's totally changed. Today, they'll try to make money while they're in office and just hope they get away with it. And if they lose an election, they'll just become a lobbyist. So they don't lose a beat. They can be as corrupt as they want while they're in office, and they all are, most of them. There's a handful that are not corrupted. But that's one of the things you don't want in a leader is corruption. Whether it's a pastor, whether it's a representative, a judge, whether it's a father, I don't care who it is, God wants wisdom and virtue in his officers. Now, this being the case, the only defense for your life, liberty, and property, which God has given you, are gifts of God. They're called God-given, natural, inalienable rights. Liberties, okay, among which are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Those are things that will have to be defended by the people themselves. And so Thomas Jefferson said, you know, there's no better place for political power to reside, not in a king, not in a government, not in any officer, but has to stay in the people themselves, bigger than the Constitution. The people are bigger than the Constitution that they make because it's their Constitution. So they get to set up their constitution. So now, here's how you set up your organic laws. Now, I'm going to skip monarchy. I'm going to skip aristocracy and democracy, even though, in fact, today, we are no longer a republic. That is called de facto. De jure, we are still a republic. That is, in law. But in fact, because the judges no longer judge according to the law. Our judges, every single one of them, no matter what they say, they do not judge by the Constitution. They do not. Even though they might refer to it, you think, oh, no, see, he said Constitution. Yeah, but it's a game. He is not judging by the Constitution. He is judging by the latest set of laws that interpret that Constitution, not by the Constitution. The Constitution is written in common sense language, the original Constitution. It's very easy to understand, but no judge today, no judge, is going to read it according to its original spirit or letter. None. So, even the best of them are liars because they have betrayed the people's trust. Civil government is a public trust. It was set up as a trust. The first trust is that God entrusts to the sovereign people. No king. If King Henry VIII is the king, he still has to rule in the name of England. That is, in the name of the people. So, you see, there has never been a king on the face of the earth until now. There's never been a ruler on the face of the earth until now, where even the most egregious king, the most absolute monarch, still ruled in the name of the people, under God, in the fear of God, King Henry VIII. Now, he was a monster, he didn't really do it, and so on and so forth, but he never said, he never claimed, I am God. I am the king. I claim for myself that there's no God above me. The French Revolution was the first to start such an idea. In the French Revolution, the French said, you know, let's get rid of the red. Let's not have any red. And let's pit the people under us, which I'm going to do in black, under the blue. Now, if all you have is blue rulers, and they didn't make the sovereign people, they said, we, an aristocracy, will rule in the name of the People's Republic, and we call it the democracy, it doesn't matter what you call it, but actually, the rulers were manipulating the process. They were demagogues. And they set up a reign of terror to eliminate all of their competitors. That's a great way to do business. You just kill off the opposition. No need for a vote. You just set up a committee of public health, welfare. And that public health and welfare always, of course, in the name of the people. It's always set up as though it's in the name of the people, but it's actually in the name of a group of insiders, who is a small Politburo, a small Duma, which they just decide, oh yeah, he's trying to say something, run against us here, have him killed. And they don't do it in the name of the king or in the name of the government, they do that in the name of public safety. It's not safe for the public that you're alive. So they just chopped heads off through the guillotine. And eventually, everybody, including Robespierre himself, were guillotined. I mean, sooner or later, people figured out how to use that guillotine on each other. Yeah, you get your head under here. Pretty soon, everybody was chopped their head off. And that we are heading in that direction. We are heading in that same direction. The French Revolution has actually conquered America. But I'm not interested in that. I'm only interested in how God set up this government in the first place. So I'm going to skip kings, monarchies, aristocracies, and all that. And I'm just going to talk about the system that was set up here because we were the first nation ever in the history of the world following the pattern in the Old Testament, but not according to its theocracy. Because Jesus ended the theocracy idea. Jesus did not want to set up a Israeli theocracy. He saw that it didn't work, and so he said, God is not in that. God's not in that. So he said, render unto Caesar. He didn't say, render unto me as the king. Jesus is the king. How many know Jesus is the king? But he didn't say, render unto me as the king. But he's the king. He could have said it. But he said this, render unto Caesar, that which belongs to Caesar, and unto God, that which belongs to God. So he kept God, but he kept Caesar, and it wasn't Jesus. So the American colonies, before they were a nation, they set up this idea here of having God be the head of Massachusetts. But God is not a political actor. And God was not setting up a theocracy where everybody in Massachusetts was a Christian of a certain persuasion, Presbyterian, Congregationalist, Baptist, Quaker, whatever. So some states were set up under the Anglican, some were set up under the Catholic, Maryland. Some were set up under, nothing, Rhode Island. Some were set up under Quakers, Pennsylvania, and so on. So each state had its own kind of church state, and then they would tolerate other groups and persecute other groups. You know, if you were in Virginia and you were a Baptist, you would get in jail. Or you would be banished, and maybe you'd be given a couple of warnings, and the next time you're beaten, and the next time all your goods are taken, and the next time you might even be killed. But in Massachusetts, you definitely got your nose cut off if you were a Quaker, or your ears chopped off, or your tongue ripped out, or something. They would do something to indicate that they meant it. Well, that was not fun having God as the ruler of those colonies, because he had some mean God interpreters. You see? So the founding fathers thought, you know, not a good idea. Especially since one was under the Anglican, another one was under the Presbyterian, another one under nothing, and so on and so forth. So, you know, they decided, let's not establish any religion. So they had a new idea. Let's leave all the power in the aggregate people. They are the best ones to defend their own rights, their own natural rights that God gave them as inalienable or unalienable or inalienable. Meaning, you could never sell them. You could never get rid of them. Nobody gave them to you except God, and nobody can take them away except God. And he won't. So they set it up in such a way that the people then had three jobs to do. Here's their first job. To set up, and I'm going to make a little picture here to show you what they do, to set up laws. So here are their, what we call, the organic laws. Laws organic. Or fundamental. These are the fundamental laws. I'll give you three of them. The Declaration, that's one law. The Declaration gives the spirit of our laws. Number two, the Constitution. Now remember, at first it wasn't the Constitution. At first it was something else. Because we had what's called the Articles of Confederation. You remember that? The Articles of Confederation. Do you all remember that? Are you familiar with this? That the United States were all states that were sovereign, and then there was a union of states, but the states were the only ones that really were in power. So it wasn't individuals, wasn't we the people, it was we the states. And so they set up a confederacy, you know. So everybody kept their freedom, kept their independence. But later they made a constitution to overcome some of the problems that occurred when Virginia had one set of laws, Massachusetts had another set of laws, Georgia had another set of laws, and so on. So they set it up so that they would have a constitution called a federal type government. That meant federal. I'll do it in a second to fully illustrate this. But our constitution in 1776, we just made a declaration. Right after that, we made the Articles of Confederation. But then in 1787, we set up a constitution for a republic. So when the lady asked the gentleman, she said, well, what kind of government do we have? And he said, res publica, or a republic, if you can keep it. The lady's name was Mary, and the man's name was Benjamin Franklin. And so Benjamin Franklin said, we've given you a new form of government, but you have to ratify it. And I don't know if you can keep it, because it demands of people that are vigilant. It demands of people that are informed. It demands of people that are virtuous. I don't know if you are. So it's a republic if you can keep it. Now, if you want a monarchy, we didn't give you one of those. If you want an aristocracy, we didn't give you one of those. And if you want a democracy, we're not part of that at all. The worst form of government is a democracy, because all you have, it'll always degenerate into either a totalitarian, Napoleon type, or it'll degenerate into one of the other tyrannical forms. A democracy easily heads for anarchy. And the fact that there are demagogues always ready to cajole the people and bribe the people and play all kinds of games with the people, that's how you get elected. What's amazing is that I've been elected now five different times to a state office without ever playing unfair. I've never played unfair. People have no idea, because the machine totally was set out to destroy me and to prevent me, but they've never figured out how to do it. But I didn't cheat. I didn't play unfair. They cheated at every step. I could easily write a book on how they cheated, but it doesn't matter. I don't even care about it. But it's hard to be virtuous and wise in public office. It's not easy. It would be easier if all I have to do, they even can articulate who I am. They say, don't vote for him. He never follows the leader. And I agree with them. You're right. I won't. I'll never follow the leader. Because that leader has an agenda. And it's not the people's agenda. So how do I get elected? It's a secret. But you have to be wise and virtuous. You know, that's something that the others don't have. They have the name, but they don't have the reality. So you're not going to make it. Because God, actually, I believe God still wants to have his laws obeyed. I believe we have a mandate, Romans 13:1, let every soul, pasasuke, every soul, be subject to the higher authorities, exousiais. So I believe that he wants us to be completely subordinated to whoever the king is. But the king in our case is not King Henry VIII. It's not the president of the United States. The highest power in the United States, or in Texas, is not the king at all. It's the people. It's the sovereign people. And you'll notice on all documents, it always says in the name of the people, we the people, etc. So it's always you, the people. Fortunately, you're lazy and they take advantage of that. Fortunately, you don't care that much and they take advantage of that. That's how wicked people get into office, because you don't care to run, you don't care to vote, you don't care to talk, you don't care to discipline, you don't care to inform yourself. It's okay. They know that and they're happy for that situation. I, on the other hand, am not. And therefore, I not only vote, but I also contribute, but I also do things, but I also articulate, I also, you know, participate. And I'm free to do it. I never take a penny. I would never take a penny. I don't want money. I do it strictly at my own expense, out of my own pocket, because I not only love people in the Lord as a Christian, as a pastor, I also love them because God gave a third duty. And I don't have to do this. No one makes me do it. But I believe God told me to do it. So when I entered the first time, I just did it because God told me to do it. I didn't even want to do it. I don't want to do it. I got plenty to do. I got so much to do. I'm behind schedule all the time. About 3 years. So if I could just take about 3 years off, I could probably catch up. But it's probably not going to happen. But that's all right, because I believe God is with me. And anyway, and so if the worst comes to worst, I'll die. And then I'll be all right because I'll go to heaven. So, but you don't have many leaders, but you know what? You have some. It's what's interesting to me is not how many wicked people are, but that they aren't all. That's always amazing to me, is I meet fellow people along the way that feel as strongly as I do. And I enjoy then politics for that reason. It doesn't bother me that people are corrupt, that they're ignorant, that they don't care for the people, that they're easily bribed, that big donors want, you know, to influence. It doesn't bother me. I'm not bothered by that at all. I'm quite happy to live among the snakes and the alligators and the sharks and so on. It's not a problem. I'm not even mad. I'm not even upset. I don't even get frustrated. I just simply carry on my own thing. One faithful person can ruin, threaten, destroy, shake all corrupt people. They hate it when I'm elected. That's why they do everything they can to get me not elected. And they're always certain they're going to do it. I think it's funny. Don't you think it's funny? It's funny. So how do I get elected? I'm not going to tell you. there's a way to do it that's fair and right and correct. And they can cheat all they want. It doesn't bother me. I'm expecting them to. I count on it. I'm planning on them cheating. But I get up earlier. I rise earlier. I talk to God more. I just seek God. God, how should I do it? How should I approach this? And, you know, if you don't have an agenda of your own and you don't really care, God will speak to you. He will give you wisdom if he's in this. Now, if he's not in it and the Antichrist is supposed to rule, let him have it. If the devil is the only one running the politics, let him have it. But I like to get in there and bother people. I love to get in there and I'm kind of like Charlie Chaplin. I don't know if you remember the old movie of Charlie Chaplin, and he was a mechanic in a big factory and he had this huge wrench. I remember it was just gigantic wrench. And all the machineries of the factory were grinding away. You know how those little wheels turn inside the wheels? You know, and he just thought one day, you know, this would be interesting to see what happened if I drop my wrench inside all of the churning wheels. And it just came to a halt, and the whole thing chaos and so on. That's the way I see myself. I don't see myself accomplishing anything, but having a lot of fun making sure they don't. So they hate it. I'm telling you, the chairman and all of the leaders, get rid of him. Stop him. He'll get in and he'll mess us up. We don't even know how he's doing it. Because Charlie Chaplin was like this. You know. And so he did, they don't know how he did that. How did he do that? Well, that's me. That's exactly what I do. I just saw the movie and I liked it. I thought it was a very interesting movie. So as a Christian, how do you get things done? Well, you have to know the system inside out. You see, I not only know my side, I know their side also. And you have to be wise as a serpent, but innocent as a dove. So everything being done on the up and up, they can't catch you because you're not bribed. You're not scared. It's like, we'll see to it that you... Blah. It doesn't scare me at all. It's okay. Because I fear God. When you fear God, you don't fear man. Therefore, I serve the sovereign people as a true servant. Now, here's how you do it. First of all, the first thing you do is declare the laws. So the people, the sovereign people, declare their own laws. Let's declare laws that do what? That protect or secure life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Which is another way of saying property, property, property. Life is your property. You have a sacred conscience. That is your most valuable piece of property. I value that. Because the people valued that. Because God gave it to them. And it's inalienable. It's natural. It's God-given. Therefore, it can't be changed. It's fixed. It's immutable. The fact that God put into nature, which is on top of the sovereign, who is subject to nature, subject to God. One is over two, two over three, and three over four. So instead of King Henry VIII making up the laws, let the people make up their own laws. So the people decided to elect Thomas Jefferson, John Adams. They decided to elect certain people who had wisdom and virtue. And those people of wisdom and virtue said to themselves, we may be the last generation who is wise and virtuous. Therefore, what we do may not last. But we ourselves will sacrifice and pledge our lives, our liberties, our fortunes, our good honor, everything, because we believe that men could be ruled by God. So it's a risk. We will set up a government that is self-governing. In other words, the sovereign here, three, the earthly sovereign, under God's law, nature, that earthly sovereign could set up and declare its own laws. So that is the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, which is a republic, and then finally the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights basically says this. The Bill of Rights says, 1791, that certain things are not going to come under the government. They're free of government. Government cannot touch them. And the first one that they mentioned was that every man has a natural and indefeasible right to worship God according to the dictates of their conscience. Only they didn't write it that way. They wrote that Congress, in other words, laws are written in the negative. So here's the negative. The negative is, and by the way, what I just read to you was Article 1-6 of the Texas Constitution. That every man has an indefeasible, a natural right to worship God according to the dictates of his own conscience. In other words, leave government out. Government should never touch the church. Now, today, government touches every single church. So, they've already broken the Bill of Rights. And the Supreme Court and the Court of Texas and so on and so forth, they all break it. So, they're all lawbreakers. Again, I told you that doesn't bother me. I don't care if they're all scoundrels. I don't care if they're all lawbreakers. I don't care if they're all ignorant. I don't care what they are. But I will enter, not just I, but others will enter and change things. So I've been part of a revolution for the last 25, 30 years, a revolution to turn the country back to the original Constitution, the original declarations. The spirit of the laws is here. The letter of the law is here. And that which is not part of the law is here. Subject matter, jurisdiction. The state, the secular government, that which is common to all men, shall never touch these things that God has set apart. So they're called excluded. Not exempted, but immune. Completely immune by nature. So you set up your laws and you declare everything that you want to do and don't want to do and so on and so forth. The next thing you do is you make provision. So you provide a way, provide a way of allocating power. Now I'm going to make this little picture here. Won't mean anything to you. But you notice there that I divided all the power. First thing I divided was local, state, and federal. The second thing I divided was I have three different branches: legislative, executive, judicial. So you see, I made nine little boxes there to show that power in the original republic, not the way it is today. Today, they've concentrated all power, just the opposite of what the founders wanted. They've concentrated all power in the hands of, you know, one or a few and so on and so forth, but not the people. Now, that was never the people. The people's government, de jure, that is, legally speaking, the people's government is the one I'm describing. And the reason I'm describing it is, I'm not trying to teach politics. The reason I'm describing it is because God said you have a responsibility. So I'm teaching on citizenship. I'm teaching what the Bible teaches, not what government teaches. But nevertheless, our form of civil government came out of the Bible. There are examples who are not from Rome, not from Greece, not from Babylon, not from ancient Egypt, even though none of those disagree. You know why? Because those come under the natural law. And they all agree that there's a God. There's never been a nation, never, not until the modern world, not until recently, never been a nation that didn't agree with what I'm just going to say, is that he who rules must rule in the fear of God. So even the most egregious tyrant in the ancient world, the most horrendous despot, Genghis Khan, he ruled by the mandate of heaven. He never said, I rule in my own name. He never said, I don't rule for the good of the people. They all swore an oath to God that they would rule for the people's good, even when they took stuff for themselves and they did all kinds of evil things. They never said, we're doing this without God. Not one of them. So none of them claimed to do what they were doing in their own name, even though they cheated. Now, cheating doesn't bother me. Maybe it bothers you. It doesn't bother me. Cheating does not bother me because I expect it. People are sinful. I don't know if you've discovered that or not. It's in the Bible, by the way. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. I take that scripture and I've found that my experience agrees with that. And all includes me. So being that I'm a clever liar, deceiver, cheater, and so on and so forth, I expect other people to be similar. And sure enough, they are. I'm always delighted to find that other people are wicked. It always delights me. Ah, wonderful. You're just like me. But as a servant, when you get into office, that's a different matter entirely. Now, even though naturally I'm a liar and a cheater and a deceiver, I came under the law of God which convicted me. I took the mercy of God which forgave me. And I was filled with the Holy Spirit who not only guides me and leads me and teaches me and disciplines me and afflicts me until I do my office as he said. Now, that makes me, who by nature was sinful and wicked, a saint. Not only in believing, but also through discipleship and also through training so that I could actually do and not just want to do and not just believe in doing. Did you see how I moved from believing to wanting to doing? Now, because that's the case, that's practical. So, politics, civil government, the public thing, res publica, politics, the civil government, the public thing, is all a matter, then, of establishing God's judgment, God's justice, God's holiness, God's mercy, God's power over the face of all the earth, over all men. And I'm concerned about that. I believe here in this city we have some non-Christians. Yeah, we do. We have people that are not Christian. That's not a problem. In the church it would be. To have non-Christians in the church, not on Sunday morning, but on Sunday night. Everyone here is a Christian. Because on Sunday night, who else would be idiotic enough to come? This is for Christians. This is for training. This is for discipline. This is for growing up, getting all the sin out of your life. Sunday morning, it's different. There we preach the gospel. We talk about it. We challenge people to become Christians, but not everyone is. That's a mixed group. And in the society at large, it's really mixed. Because there are non-Christians, there are non-moral people, there are atheists, there are communists, there are socialists, there are all kinds of people out there, and you know what? They can still be good citizens as long as they don't practice what they believe. So, the reason why government is set up is to stop the bad guy and protect the good guys. How many know we're the good guys? How many know we're the good guys? You got to know that you're the good guy. But you're not good if you don't do your duty. Your first duty is to God. Second duty is to all men. Your third duty is to all men, not just your own, but everybody. And that's a political issue there, to render unto Caesar that which belongs to Caesar. Nothing more, but nothing less. The third thing, they only do these three things. This is all that you do when you're the sovereign people and you're the sovereign. It's just like you were the king. The sovereign will, the sovereign pleasure is all that's going to be done. First thing is you make up the laws. Second thing is you, and you would be wise to make laws that agree with God. That's what our founders said. Let's not make any laws that are not in agreement with nature itself. So you remember when Thomas Jefferson penned his famous Declaration of Independence, he said, you know, this is something that according to God and nature's God, those things that are, you know, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, those kind of things, those are inalienable, God-given, natural rights. Let's build a government that protects those. And anybody who wants those lawfully will protect them, and anybody who attacks those, we will then attack them that attack them. So every republic has an enemy, and we'll get to that in a minute. So the third thing is to set up the officers, or we call that appointing, voting, appointing. You appoint people to office. Remember I said there were nine boxes? So you have to have nine officers. So here, officer, 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 officer. All right, so there we are. So those are the nine offices. These are on the local level. These are on the state level. These are on the federal level. These are your legislators. These are your executives. These are your judicial ones. So you can go to any form of government in our nation, and I can show you which ones are federal, which ones are state, which ones are local, which ones, you know, are this and that and so on and so forth. Everybody fits in. Now they have a thing called bureaucrat. What's a bureaucrat? It's not constitutional. There's no bureaucrat in the Constitution. Where does the welfare state come in? It's not in the Constitution. It's forbidden, absolutely forbidden. Nevertheless, today, we have taken over, we have laid on top of this wonderful God-given, very close to the Old Testament, very close to the New Testament, very close to natural government. It wasn't perfect. Nobody ever said it was perfect, but it was close. And that's why we were the greatest nation for a while on the face of the earth. But it doesn't take long, and all the founding fathers said it would happen, before people will figure out who are elected, how to unjustly enrich yourself. Instead of being a trustee of the people's precious, dearest rights, interests, liberties, and properties, let's make them insecure. Let's make life fragile. Let's make people be afraid. Let's make them not happy. Well, now you have legislators who don't care one whit for what the only time they ever pretend like they want you is when they want your vote. But once they get in, they listen to the lobbyist. They listen to the big donor. They listen to those that will pay their bill. That's called bribery. You cannot bribe me. I will never, ever, ever take a bribe. Why? Well, I don't know. It's just being Christian. That to me is what Christian is. But obviously, they're all Christians today. How many know they're all Republicans, they're all Christians and so on. So that's meaningless now to say that. But they're not mature. And so I don't reject them because they're immature. I just simply say they're immature and they shouldn't rule. And the only reason I get in there is to mess up all their programs. Do you understand? Somebody would say, well, could you go in there and make sure we have all our rights? Nah, probably not. Even if I could pass one thing, they would pass 10 in the meanwhile. You're not going to catch up. You're not going to get your government back. And the reason isn't because the bad guys are bad or because you don't have enough people like me. The reason is you don't care. If you don't care, then you get what you want. You get exactly what you deserve. If you want a monarchy, you're going to get one. If you want an aristocracy, you'll have one. If you want a democracy, you can have it. You can have whatever you want. But if you want a republic, you must be eternally vigilant. You must be diligent, night and day. And if you don't care about it, you've got to remember this, that God said, pasasuke, let every soul be subject to the higher powers, that is, to the higher authorities. So we have forgotten that God is in this thing. And the reason why I want America free, and the only reason I'm involved, not at all to be a legislator or anything. The reason I'm doing it is because of the church. I want the church kept free. Is it today? No. Are people free? No. And will they? Are we heading in that direction? No. But I still believe that until God tells me otherwise, I still believe there's hope. And I believe that people will wake up one of these days. But they aren't awake today, I'll tell you that. They're not awake. And you can hardly talk to Christians. They're mostly the ones that don't vote. They're apathetic. Or they're easily corrupted and so on and so forth. Now, doesn't bother me because I can see the churches are like that. Because the churches are like that, I don't expect that, in fact, the politics is going to be any better than the pastors. And I blame the pastors for everything. Why I'm a pastor. Now, those are the three things that any sovereign people would do, and that's exactly what our founders did. By the way, you can't read this in any book anywhere. I have culled this, I have gathered this inductively over the years, first out of the Bible, but second out of reading all of the letters as well as documents of the founders, both in Texas as well as in the nation, but also throughout history. So I've had to read Cicero, I've had to read, you know, all of the Machiavelli. You have to read everything in order to know everything. And so by doing that, I've come up with a very simple thing because I read the same books they read. I read their writings, then I read those that they had studied, and so on, and that's how you learn everything. But I found out it's all in the Bible. Everything's in the Bible. The thing I like about the Bible is the Bible will say a thing in one sentence. The thing that's difficult about reading, the Spirit of the Laws, written by Montesquieu, is it's a whole bunch of pages. And it's just saying a couple of things. Or all of John Locke's works. You know. But I do it, and I take copious notes. Not only do I read their writing, I write another book that's 2-3 times John Locke's little treatise. Because I'll write notes upon notes upon notes of what I've discovered and learned. So I can reduce it now to a few sentences, not because I'm so brilliant, but because I did a lot of hard work. And because I'm faithful to God, and because I fear God, and I believe that's my duty. So I do it as a service to you as a Christian, first of all, because you are to be the light and the salt of this world. Did you know that? That means you're not free to be, you know, a 25 water. Beep, beep. This little light of mine. You know, it actually should be a little brighter than that. Because unless they see your good works and give glory to the Father in heaven. So they have to see something. There has to be some light shined on them. And therefore, I'm trying to help you to do that. If you want to, you don't have to. Nobody forces you. All duties are moral, meaning you get to choose. So if you choose not to, fine. There are consequences. If you choose to, there are also consequences. What you sow is what you're going to reap. So the reason we have a government today is because of the pastors. I said that before. Pastors are the real problem. So I'm seeking to do something. Nobody's asking me to. No one even wants me to. I'm seeking to set the pastors free. Will they appreciate it? Never. Will they thank me? No. Will they stone me? Yes. And so I love being stoned. I'm going to do it. But I'm going to do everything to help them. Why? Because I believe in God and I fear God. I don't work for people. I work for God. God gives me all my rewards. God is the one that defends me. And if he doesn't, I'm finished. Now, if you don't have that kind of carefree attitude, you don't want to be a leader. Because to be a trustee, you have to be willing to throw your life away. I have no thoughts, I have no feelings, I have no will. I will what he wills, I think what he thinks, and I'm going to say and do what he says and does. Remember Jesus? That's what he said. He said, I want you to know this. I will only do the will of God. What about your will? I'm not going to do it. I'll be dead to my will. Oh, what do you think? It isn't what I think. It's what God says. Remember he said that to the devil? It's written. Yeah, but what's your opinion on this? I don't have an opinion. I'll just tell you what God said. That's authority. Because the author of the universe, author up here, gives authority to this people and to these laws and these institutions and these officers to do something. Now, what is it they're going to do? Here's what government's all about. First of all, you have down here statutes. Okay? They can be called ordinances. They can be called laws. They're not like these laws. So these are derivative. That is subordinate. Derivative. Derivative statutes, laws, ordinances, whether they're state, local, so on and so forth. And every law that the legislature passes, so these are done by the government. This one was not done by the government. This one made the government. There was no government. Government's not first. Government is subordinate, a creature, to the people. Now, which people? Not you as people, but you as aggregated people. So the sovereign is the aggregate people. Now, those statutes and those, they must pass muster underneath the Constitution and the institutions. So these are the Republican institutions. Republican institutions. It's going to be hard for you to copy all this. So work hard. Because you need to know it. And these are the officers, or I could call them trustees. Because these officers or trustees are entrusted with the power here that's been allocated. Remember, under this provision, under this declaration. So these officers take these provisions of power and authority under these declarations or laws, under this sovereign will and pleasure, under these natural laws, under God. So see how simple it is. And you need to be able to, as simply as I just did, be able to figure out your whole form of government. And I'm teaching you in one simple lesson. And without this picture, it'd be hard, by the way, to do it, because I have honed it down to say, this is exactly how it operates, and it's extremely simple. So an officer is someone that we've elected because that's the way the law said it. And we elect them according to these different little spots here because that's the way the law said it. So everything follows the law. The law is always supreme and first because the people said it was, because God said it was in nature, and God revealed it through the Holy Scriptures, Old Testament and New Testament. Now, everything, you might think Jesus wasn't political, but Jesus had some tremendously powerful things to say politically that would not be there unless he spoke them. Like, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. Now, it wasn't anything novel and new, but the way he said it, it was novel and new. When he said, render unto Caesar, he was talking to his own people. And he said, render four things. Does anyone know what the four things are you render to Caesar? Four things and only four. Fear. You must fear the wrath of God that is put in the hands of these people right here. Now, I haven't drawn this. I'll draw it right now. I'm going to draw this. See if you know what it is. Anybody know? Okay. I'll draw this then. Sword. That's called the public power. Now, you notice that the public power is way at the bottom. Never use power without authority of a law, which is under these officers, under these institutions, under this organic law, under this aggregate people, under this natural law, under God. Never draw out your gun, your sword, your power. Never use your office except it's under all of that higher law. No judge today will judge according to the way that I just said. Therefore, they're not judging correctly. And I indict them. And I have a right to indict them. Not only because I'm an officer, but also because I'm a citizen. Because I'm part of the aggregate people, I get to speak up. But you could too. No one is stopping you. It's just that you don't want to take the time to think it through. You don't want to take the time to talk to your neighbors. You don't want to take the time to go to your precinct and then your district and then your state and then your national and so on. You don't want to take the time. It's okay. I understand. But I'm going to encourage one or two of you. One or two of you. I might get, you never know. I might get a couple of takers tonight who said, you know what? I need to be more responsible because it's a command of God. It is not just simply, well, I'll do it if I feel like it. Maybe I have scouts that night. Maybe I want to watch a TV program. No, it's not it. If you're in this form of government and you want to keep it and you think it's valuable to your children and grandchildren and so on, if you want to lose it, then you can. Don't do anything. And you surely will have exactly what you've sown. You will reap what you've sown. And if you think that God isn't into this, you're wrong. God cares very much about government. Civil government is a gift of God. It is not a work of Satan. So Machiavelli, by the way, wasn't just a blackguard. He actually was a guy with a lot of wisdom. He was just telling the truth. Here's the way princes rule in fact. He wasn't saying how it should be. He was just saying how it is. And so that's called real politic. In other words, that's the way it really is. Nevertheless, we don't go by what is real. We go by what is ideal. That is, how did God set up justice and liberty? One nation under God, liberty and justice for all. How did God set up liberty? How did God set up justice? If you have a duty, then you have a right. And if you have a right, then you have a liberty. In other words, I have the liberty to do what I have a right to do, which is a duty from God. So a duty from God creates a right in me against everyone else, which gives me a liberty against the whole world. So all my rights come from duties. My rights are not above my duties, they're below my duties. Whatever God has given you a duty to do, you have a right to do. You always have a right to do your duty. And whatever you have a right to do, you have a liberty to do. Because the sovereign would not give you a duty without knowing that you had a right to do your duty, without knowing that you had the liberty to do the right thing, which is your duty. Now, because God has given me now this duty, that creates, here, I'll put it up here, that creates a right, an inalienable right, a God-given right, a natural right, which produces then a liberty. So, the founders said, let's follow God's pattern and not have slaves. Let's not have privileges. Let's have natural rights, natural liberties, and natural duties. And let's protect all of that. Let's protect all of that, life, liberty, and property, among which. Let's protect that by the sovereign people writing their own laws, electing their own officers, setting up their own institutions, creating government, which is derivative statutes, using the public power according to those laws and all those higher laws. Now, what will be, and this is the end, what will be then, I'll make this 7, I'll make this 8, what would be the purpose then of government, according to this? 2 things. Actually 3, but I'm going to do it like this. First of all, this is my first purpose, is to protect the good guy. Protect those who do good. I'm going to call them the lawful citizen. The lawful. Okay, all of those that are obeying the law, the lawful citizens. That's the first thing that government should do, is protect its lawful citizens. The second thing to do is punish those that are lawless. So I'm going to punish and threaten anybody who attacks these people's rights, liberties, properties, whatever, all those things that are dear to them, that the sovereign people will and please. According to these laws, according to these allocations, according to these appointments, I want everybody, including government itself, to be punished. So the punishment then of the wicked, that is the lawless. And I'm going to write lawless here. So the lawless is anyone who breaks all these laws, who does not allow for happiness and safety. So the people's safety is number one. Do you have that today? No. Do you have happiness today? No. Unless you put your head in the sand. Because all of your rights and liberties are being eroded by criminal elements that are not being punished. Because now the statutes are no longer derivative. They're now created by men for what we call special interest. Special interest legislation is factional. That is, it's developed by an aristocracy. Let's say Merck, just to give an example. What if Merck should choose to bribe some legislator in order to get its own special interest? That goes against the common good. That goes against the people's will. That goes against the good work of you. And it steals your money to create a system that will actually harm you. They have sensors up in the sky that actually are watching you. They're not watching the criminals. They're watching you. You are the criminal they're watching. Yet it's your money. Now you have a government that is not working on your behalf for your safety. You're less safe today. And you're less happy today because you now have laws that are using the sword against you. You're the one they're punishing, and they're letting the criminal go free. Now, you all know that it's emotional with us but you don't know what to do about it because you didn't know what the original system was. There's another thing. They collect money. Any government has a right to be supported. So I'll call that, this will be 9. This will be 10. Punish the wicked. And this is the whole purpose of government. And this will be 11. So now this is called revenue. How many love the revenue department? Okay? So revenue, now listen carefully, because this is God's setup. Did I tell you the 4 duties that you owe? Uh-huh. Do you know them? I gave you 1. Fear. You have to fear this. Honor. 2. You have to honor not the persons who fill the offices, but the office. Because the office represents God. The person in the office can corrupt, but the office itself is sacred. Nobody made up the executive branch, the legislative branch, the judicial branch. Those are God's. I told you, God is the legislator. He is the lawmaker. He is the judge. He is the king. So those offices are not made up by men. And try to think of another one, like bureaucrat and administrative and so on. These are human made up to avoid coming under God's law. There is no fear of God. There is no fear of God in the churches today. That's why there's no fear of God in the nation. The reason our state's in trouble, and by the way, we are the most hopeful state of all. The world watches America, America watches Texas, and Texas watches right here. You don't know that. This is the most powerful place to be on the face of the earth, right here. Where I was yesterday out in California, that's Orange County, that's the second one. But Texas is where the real power is. Orange County is also a very highly concentrated area for Republican leadership. This is the second one right here, Tarrant County. Right here, Tarrant County. Going all the way up to Denton. Now, this is where if you're an elected official, you can't go to Dallas, you can't go to Austin, you cannot go to San Antonio, you cannot go to Houston. Why? They're bigger. Some of them are bigger. The reason you can't is because here, the highest concentration for election is found. In other words, our capacity here to deliver a higher vote is greater than Dallas. Dallas is always divided. It's greater than San Antonio. It's greater than Austin, which is Democratic for the most part. And it's greater than Houston, even though Houston is huge. But they're so divided, so factionalized, so many interests down there that they can't get anything done ever. So we're the only place where anything can get done. It's a very powerful place. So if the world is watching America, and America is watching Texas, and Texas is watching Tarrant County, this is where the action is. That puts a higher burden upon you to be involved, to care. Now, again, I don't really care that anybody cares. It's okay. I'm just going to do what I believe I'm to do because I don't need support. I don't need anyone to like me. I don't need anything. Once my Jesus tells me something to do, it's done. To the death. I'm willing to die for a duty that I believe God gave me. And I do it willingly. I do it happily. If I was shot right now, it wouldn't bother me at all. Good. Go home. Bye-bye. I'm okay. What about your family? It's all right. I believe in God. I've committed him to God. What about your children? It doesn't matter. What about your church? It's okay. God will provide somebody. Please, somebody, please, take over. How many know? If you just look around, you see the strong leadership in this church? We produce that. You know what? It doesn't matter because it's up to God. It's not up to us. You know what a leader is? It's just someone willing to be dead. That's all. A leader is not someone great. A leader is someone who's not great. A leader is someone who believes God is great. A leader is not someone who's good. A leader is someone who believes God is good. A leader isn't someone that knows anything. A leader is someone that knows God knows everything. That's a leader. That's all it takes. You see, anyone could do that. Whosoever will may come. We're looking for geniuses. We don't have to have that. All we have to have is faithful people who will be trustees of the people's care, all the interests of the people right here. Here's their interests, not special interests, but common interests. Politics has nothing to do with Jesus. There are people that think this is a Christian country. It's not. It's not a Christian country because everybody in the country is not Christian, first of all. Second of all, even if they were Christian, they're not mature. But they're not all Christian. So this is a government of all the people because God loves all people. For God so loved the church. No, For God so loved the world that he sent his only son to save them. But before he saves them, he's got to keep them alive. So government is to keep you alive. It's to protect the good people from the bad people. That's all. That's the sum of all government. The whole reason that government is nothing but force. You see that sword? Now watch. All the government is this sword right here. That's government. But look at how government's under laws, under officers, under institutions, and under organic laws, which are under the people, which are under nature, which are under God. You see how that, oh, that's so beautiful to me, so simple, so precious of God. So that we now know that the only money that government can raise is that which is sufficient to protect me from the bad guy. Nothing more. There's no welfare state here. There's no special interest for Merck. There's nothing. You cannot have money for anything else other than that. Now, how many thousands and thousands of bureaucrats do we need? Zero. They'll need all those little bean counters. Because they are mindless people. I'm going to just be bold here. They're mindless people who are accountable to no one. If you would call a local bureaucrat and say, you know, we the people, they would say, you know, who are you? I wasn't hired by you. I was told by the legislature. I was told by the judges. I was told by some executive. So you see, even though they're subject to the executive or the legislator and so on, they gave them such broad discretionary powers that even they don't control their own servants. So the servant of my servant is not subject to me. Do you understand what I just said? Even though a bureaucrat, which isn't in this whole system here, there's no room here for bureaucrats, there's no welfare state here, there's none of the administrative nonsense that we have now. But that's the way it is. Now, but the truth is that these officers of the government didn't want to do their job. So they gave it away to somebody else who would not be responsible. I could be very concrete. It's not theoretical for me. I could name names and tell you positions right now. You cannot talk to that person and say, well, we the people, we have a constitution, and so on. They don't care. Well, that's not constitutional. They don't care. Because they were hired by somebody else, and they're just paid a fee, and they don't care, just do this and that. And, yeah, but what about this? They don't care about your rights. They don't care about your personal situation. They have no care at all. And then you call the legislator. Hey, your guy isn't caring. They don't care either. But you're my legislator. I don't care. Fire me. And then nobody does. They know it. No one's going to do it because they're paid and bribed, and therefore why should they? Because they don't belong to you anymore. You don't know how to handle your own servants. Amen. Because you don't even know that government belongs to you, because you don't know you are the government, a government of the people, for the people, by the people. But if the people be lazy, you're not going to have a res publica. You're going to have a democracy, an aristocracy, or a monarchy. And that's exactly what you have, which means the devil is going to rule. And Jesus said that. He said, you know, if you do not serve me, you will be a slave. I'm the only master you can have that'll set you free. If you become my slave, you'll be free. If you are not my slave, you will be a slave. You will not be free unto yourself. You will only be slave to somebody, either me or them. And if it's them, it's the devil. The only enemy that you have, the devil, your enemy. The enemy is that he will set up a system that will attack everything you've set up to destroy it. Here's his little system. You can put a pyramid around it if you want to. Put an eye up here if you want to. This little system here is the enemy that the Americans sought to defeat, even though it's a little symbol that you're very familiar with. And it's got all kinds of hidden little meanings and so on, and all the conspiratorial people love to study all this stuff and so on. Well, the truth is they're on the right track, but the truth is they're on the wrong track. There actually is a conspiracy. There actually is an aristocracy. There actually are people that hate you and hate your liberties, hate your freedoms, and want to take all your monies, all your properties, all of your assets, everything, and most of all, they hate your God. So they don't want to have this kind of government under God, one nation under God. They don't want that. They want the God to be a different kind of G than the one you're thinking of. They mean one government under them. Now, if you think that's silly, you better read the Founding Fathers, because that's the whole reason they set up this form of government, was not to do what the British did, not to do what the French did. You have to study the French Revolution and, as well, the whole history of English Revolution, because there's one other thing I didn't put in here, and that is underneath the natural law is something else, and I'm going to write it in another color so you can see it. It's called the common law. The common law was not just anybody's common law. It happened to be the common law of England. The common law of England. But not the common law of England as the English understood it, but the common law of England as the Americans understood it. So they adapted and adopted that common law as the law of the land. And that is something the people chose to do, is to say, let the law of America, without even writing down laws, before we even write down any laws, we're going to adopt the English common law as we understand it, because that's our right. And so they established the law of this land. The minute that Hudson landed in America, 1498, he put his foot. As soon as he put his foot on the land, he slipped like that. As soon as he put his foot on the land, he declared for the King of England. Now, he wasn't even, I said Hudson, I didn't mean Hudson. Who was it?
Cabot.
The minute he did that, he wasn't even an Englishman, but he was working for the English king. King Henry the, you know your history, 1498. Who was king at 1498? King Henry the, No. King Henry VIII, 1500s. This is 1498. His father. King Henry VIII, King Henry VII. Right. So King Henry VII was the flag that stood on American soil for the first time when an Englishman put his foot on it. Where was Columbus? 1492. 6 years earlier. But he never got to America. He never put his foot on Florida. He never put his foot on Atlanta. He never, in fact, touched American soil. You know why? Birds. As soon as he got, remember he was coming over to the New World looking for India? And as soon as he got near, he was almost, I'll just make this front pew here where the boat's going to land on America. And he would have discovered America. He didn't discover America. Do you know this? Do you know your history? So he got his boat and he was almost there, and all of a sudden he saw some birds up in the sky. And he saw the birds flying south, and so he never went to America. He went down to Hispaniola. And he went down in the Caribbean. And that's what he discovered, the Caribbean. He never found America. Did y'all know that?
Yes.
He didn't find it. So Cabot, up north, a few years later, came and landed in Newfoundland, which is up in Canada now. And he did that in 1497. The minute you put your foot on the land, you declare it in the name of the king, it's yours. This, of course, is not God. Nevertheless, God honors this. And so he declared it, didn't care about the native Indians and so on and so forth. I'll claim this for the King of England. And he had a sword to prove it. He took out his sword, you know, put his flag down. The next year, he came back and he landed on Cape Cod and declared for the English king. So America became Protestant because King Henry, remember he was Catholic? King Henry VIII, his son, he could have been Catholic easily had the Reformation not taken place in 15... What? What year did the Reformation take place? 17. But Luther began to discover just a couple of years after that guy landed. Luther began to discover in 1505, he began to discover the Psalms and then Romans, 1516. And it was just at the very time that Erasmus had discovered the New Testament in Greek. Now, when that happened, all of a sudden the gospel came to Luther. Wait a minute, the Catholic Church is wrong. Man is saved, you know, not by gratia infusa. He isn't saved by infused grace. But he's enslaved rather by imputed righteousness. Okay? Which is donum totum. No, I'm doing it in Latin, because this is how it took place. And so in Latin he meant a perfect total gift. So you are now Christians by imputation, not through gratia infusa, which the Catholics had taught, but rather through donum totum, which is a complete gift that Jesus Christ died on the cross for you. So what he did was imputed to you as righteousness. Well, anyway, Luther began to discover this. And so when Cabot lands on there, good for the English. King Henry VIII eventually becomes a Protestant. Why? Why would he become Protestant? Girls. Birds, girls. I mean, this is the humor of God. So here he is. Here's the guy's heading for America. He's almost there, but God says, you know, you're Catholic, so go down here. Then he has another Catholic, but this Catholic is English, and the Catholic English guy is going to have a son, you know. So that guy is going to turn out to be the defender of the Catholic faith, and the Pope makes him the defender of the faith, and so on. He rejects Martin Luther, but it just so happens that another guy translates the Bible, Tyndale. And Tyndale was a student of Luther. And so he spread into England a new idea that the Catholic Church was wrong and Henry was the defender of the faith. But he wanted another wife. He wanted to have a wife that would give him a son. And so he kept having one wife after another wife after another wife, and the Pope was getting tired of having so many wives and calling all the time, well, okay, that wasn't a real marriage. Okay, that'll be 50,000 ducats. Thank you. And so on and so forth. Money. Aha. So the real world of men actually is very humorous when you see how it all works out for us. Because God had a plan for America, a destiny for us to fulfill. And here we are. Do you realize who you are? You may not know how powerful you are. You may not know. You may not know how prophetic. I'm going to tell you something. I'm a prophet. Speaking from God, from the Most High. Not bragging. I'm the jerkiest guy in the world. But God uses jerks. You don't have to be anything special. You just have to simply be someone who's dead. Ordinary people. This is what's extraordinary about the world that we're talking about. It's been transformed by the gospel. Now an ordinary person can become something. In the ancient world you could not. It'd be very difficult for that to happen. But at any rate, God in his wisdom hath chosen this nation to be a light to the other nations. And this nation in the beginning understood it, even though it went through many transformations to bring us to where we are today. Now, is this the day to quit, give up, and not finish the great experiment that God had done here? Not at all. This is the day actually to waken up. You say, but it's almost over. Yeah, it's okay. It's good to come up, you know, just when the bases are loaded. So even though it's almost over, two strikes out, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's okay. It's not over until the fat lady sings. So, it's not done yet. So, you're not going to get off the hook. And I know I've been sent by God from heaven to charge you to do that which is God given you a duty to do. Politically, spiritually, intellectually, emotionally, in every way, you are charged to do your duty to God, your duty to your neighbor, and your duty to government. Are you excited about that? Of course you're not. But it doesn't matter. You've been selected and chosen by God. Because this is a great day. Now, yesterday I was in Orange County, California, as I told you. And they put me on a radio program. That radio program could well transform the black community throughout America. John Coleman, who is a black pastor, never heard such things. He immediately said, I'm going to put you throughout the whole nation. You are going to speak to the black community. It's very powerful. So I told the black community, which is falling apart. I'm not going to tell you all the details. It's falling apart. I told the black community who they were, because they don't know who they are, because they've lost their connection to God. Even those that are in the church. So they're confused today with hip-hop, confused today with homosexuality, confused today with, you know, Muslim. They're confused with everything. So the community has fallen apart. It has no substance to hold it together. But at the right hour, and now be the right hour, at the right hour, it's time to speak. Don't worry about what's there and what, you know, what appears today could be gone tomorrow. And what you don't see today could suddenly appear. It's all up to you. It's not up to some wonderful leader from the sky. It's up to you. It's up to you to get hold of these words. Practice these words. Put them not into your belief system, not into your want system, but into your do system. This is the time to be practical, to get the job done. Why? Well, for yourself, first of all. Second of all, for God. Third of all, for the people. Fourth of all, for your own grandkids. I mean, you'll find an interest somewhere why God set up these things, because he knows that if I destroy Iraq, or if I destroy the Muslims, I'm actually destroying people for whom God died. So I have a stake in not only ministering to all people, but to minister to them in such a way that they get a hold of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Why? Because that's the only way they're going to be saved. Not only in the next world, but politically, I'd like to keep them alive until they do. That's the natural law. But there's also a governmental system that works. I guarantee you that the system of sort of imposing democracy on Iraq will never work. It is useless. And I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just simply saying it won't work. It'll never work. Because you'd have to be a Christian to do it in a way that would be valuable, and they're not. They're not going to become that. So all we can hope for is to save some of those people. But they're not going to have a mob rule over there. They're just going to have chaos. Remember I told you that democracies always degenerate back into anarchy? So all you're going to have is civil war. You're not going to have everybody voting, yes, I went to the polls today. That's just silly stuff. Doesn't even work here. We are a divided nation. This nation is divided, if not down the middle, very close to down the middle. It would be only 0.5% off one way or the other. This nation is divided between the French Revolution and the Republic. Only those that are our side are all messed up. So we aren't really 50-50 at all. We're really in deep trouble. But thank God for us. I can run through a troop and leap over a wall. You know, isn't it exciting? Don't you like to have a little role to play in God's kingdom? How many know that God's going to win? Yeah. He will win. You don't have to be nervous or scared or ignorant or whatever. Yeah, God will make up for all of that. If he's so good on the right hand, he is also going to be good on the left hand. God's natural justice and liberty also counts, even though the whole purpose of it is just to keep you alive until he can get you saved. So the whole purpose of government is really just for the church. And the whole purpose of our government being set up was so that Christians could obey God with all their heart and all their soul and all their strength, and their neighbor as themselves. That's why this government was formed. Knowing that, being a pastor also, I may have a special role to play, not only inside, but also from the outside. And that role doesn't always appear right away. You can't always tell what's going on. But I may drop dead tomorrow. No problem. I'm not worried about it. But, you know, somebody else may carry on. You never know where your tapes will go or where your words will go or where, you know, someone will get a hold of something. Could be you. Could be you. You could be the one. Are you disqualified? Of course. Would God ever pick someone qualified? Never. God has never picked anyone qualified ever. He picks you and then he qualifies you. How does he do it? Very simple. He has a very simple mechanism for doing that. He kills you. It's a wonderful system. He just, you know, he sees he's not going to kill you physically. He's going to kill you psychologically. How many know that you need to die psychologically? You need to turn your will over, your mind over, your emotions over to God. Your emotions are wild. Your mind is crazy. Your will is rebellious. So you need to have a new self. So you have to take yourself, lift it up to God, say, here, God, you be me. You live through me. You talk through me. You work through me. I don't know how to think. I don't know how to feel. I don't know how to want. I don't know how to do. But God is in his people. We are the light of the world and the salt of this world. I believe the best is yet to come, and I believe God has saved the best to the last. Now, I'm not just saying that to stir up somebody emotionally. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's the truth. And if I yelled real loud, it wouldn't make it any more truth. If you want me to, I will. I like yelling. I don't mind. But it doesn't make it any better. The only thing that makes it better is when you take a hold of this in your heart and you say, Lord, use me. Lord, I want to obey those three duties because I have three rights, because I have three liberties, and I want to do that for your glory. And when you do that, the world will give thanks. Not only the Jewish people, not only the Muslim people, not only the Hindus and the Buddhists and the atheists and the Satanists and the witchcraft people, all of those people are beloved of God, for God so loved the world. That's what politics is for. Politics is your religion through your morals fulfilling the will of God on earth for all men until they repent, believe, and obey. So I believe the best has been saved to the last. Wouldn't that be powerful today if we saw the final harvest brought in? The final harvest is being brought in out there. It's only in Europe and America today where things are dead, 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 dead. The Muslim nations are quite alive. It's America that's lost its will. America's in the position of power. Europe is in a position of power, but it is no longer Christian. Even America never was a Christian nation in the first place, but it's certainly not one now. And it never will be one, because God's never wanted it to be one, and it cannot be one. You can have Christians in it, but you cannot dominate it with Christianity. Everyone, let's have communion. No, you can't do that. Christianity is not a universal religion. It's a particular religion that you come in voluntarily. Therefore, you can't make it a nation. A nation forces. You see that sword? That means every law that they pass has to be forced. If they say it's 55, it's 55. Now, they may adjust it for a few miles here and there, but the point is that's a law. And laws have consequences, and they put you in jail or fine you or kill you. That's what laws do. You can't make that Christianity. It's not a Christian nation. In Christianity, we'd be handing out communion. We'll be getting people baptized. All right, everybody, we're going to baptize everybody today. That's not us. I mean, that's for the church. God set up the church for that. The only holy nation in the Bible is the church of Jesus Christ. The church's disunity is what's a shame to the world. They don't see us. And I'm not talking about some kind of institutional unity. I'm talking about the fact that we're preaching holiness, mercy, and power. In a way that the world knows there is a God and He's here. We should be preaching with power and demonstration so that people hear us and see us and know that's Jesus. They can see Him living, dwelling in us. You all ready? All right, let's do it. No, because this is the gospel. The gospel is a wonderful thing. You know, it's the only religion with good news. This to me is good news. To me it's exciting. I feel safe and happy in a world that's not safe and happy. But I'm safe and happy because I got a Jesus. I'm not nervous. I'm not afraid. I don't care how many bad guys there are. I only want to know if God loves me and if God has given me a job to do. I don't really want to know if there's a lot of people out there that hate me or don't like me or whatever. He's already told me that. I don't believe people like me. I don't believe anybody really likes me. You know what? But I believe Jesus does. As long as Jesus does, you know what?